We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Charlotte Green.
The preview of Broadway's latest multi-million dollar musical, Titanic, was cancelled because due to technical problems, the ship wouldn't sink.
Thanks to Eric Heyman of London for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and John Diamond. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Hawks. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Telegraph sent in by Harry Havelock of Hove.
Parents have withdrawn their son from Lancing because he was being bullied. His ankle was severely bruised and he was on crutches for a week. The school said he had to stand up for himself.
Jeremy, what promised you can be sure with a family shell-out?
This will be the Conservative Party. In part of their manifesto is aimed at bolstering the family, which means giving back the tax allowances that Major took away when he was Chancellor of the Exchequer. And they're trying to elevate the status of marriage by recognising the solemn and binding nature of it, which means bunging people a few quid so that they'll do it. And they want, the Tories want to recognise that some women choose to stay at home while their husbands go out and take care of a 17-year-old. They've also got this, they've also got a chicken working for them. A pantomime chicken, a man who used to be part of a caterpillar once and was also the front of a St. Bernard and was chosen by John Major, who's been playing a horse's arse for a very long time. But he's saying that Blair is frightened of the debate, which he is, plainly, because if there is one person more odious than John Major in the country, it's probably Tony Blair. He's scary and weird-looking, and we won't vote for him if he goes on the telly and looks at us in those mad, staring eyes. I reckon, anyway. How do we stand for bias on that one? Are we all right?
I think you represented the people very well there, Jeremy.
This was the Tory Party's election manifesto published this week. It offers financial incentives to couples with children in the hopes that they'll vote Tory. In other words, they're dangling carrots in front of rabbits to make them behave like lemmings. John, who had a puppet show for his party?
Every general election, you get the fringe candidates. You get the parties you never see from 1 5 years to the next. And this time it's the Liberal Democrats. who set up... Interesting this, David Steele's wife was called Judy. And they thought the best way of demonstrating what was happening to the country was to have a man beating Judy. This says something about Paddy to me, I don't know what it says to you. And so they decided that Punch and Judy was Labour and Tory, that Blair, was Blair Punch or was Blair Judy, I can't remember. One was Punch, one was Judy, and they set this up at a seaside, end of the peer show. I think there's some connection here with the end of the House of Lords. I can't quite work out what it is. But that's it, really.
Ashdown provided the sausage, of course.
Yeah.
Paddy Ashdown launched the Liberal Democrats election campaign with puppets of Tony Blair and John Major as Punch and Judy. But as one had a fixed grin and mad staring eyes and the other a blotchy face and an ill-fitting dress, people assumed it was actually Richard and Judy. This isn't the first time the Liberals have led with a character at his best with a hand up his trousers and a swazzle in his throat. How they miss Jeremy Thorpe. Two points all round. Tony, who scored 10 points with his handwriting?
Tony Blair, the Labour manifesto, which he allegedly they said he wrote it in his back garden in his own handwriting. Britain deserves better, it's called. Britain deserves better what? What? Better footballers? Better Eurovision Song Contest entries? I mean, it's not clear. And in this he says that I do not intend to dazzle for the first 100 days and then disappoint. He's honest enough to admit he'll disappoint from day one. And he sort of claims their policies are from the radical centre. I don't know whether you can do that, can you? It's an oxymoron, isn't it? You know, we intend revolutionary to do exactly what's been done before. I Is it possible?
No, you can't. You can't have a radical centre. Right. Is that what you wanted to know?
That's what I wanted to know. You better tell Tony Blair.
Coffee then. Cream is as radical a centre as you can get. Spit into the cuspidor, which is what I want to do with a lot of politicians. Can I have a question? I've been here for ages. It's my second fag.
Yeah, go on.
Give children are growing up. I'll have to shave again in a minute.
Alan, listen to this.
Don't laugh at me, 'cause I'm a fool. I know it's true, yes, I'm a fool.
Which April Fool vowed to dig for victory.
Oh, I really think they ought to suspend April Fool's Day if there's an election on at the same time, because... Here we're taking the Representation of the People Act to ridiculous extremes because we're going to have a mention of Swampy's party. And Swampy, whom I approve of because he's a politician who lives in a hole and is rarely seen, except to come up and smell a bit and have a drink. That's exactly the sort of politicians you want. Swampy came out of his hole briefly to say he was standing for Parliament, but it was a joke. It wasn't as much a joke as the 600,000 others who were standing for Parliament, but he then, on April the 2nd, recanted. He told the truth. That's a remarkable thing for a politician. Within 24 hours, he sees he has to tell the truth in order to commend himself to the public. That's what he did. The Swamp is now back down his hole. All the other buggers are scrabbling for our votes.
Not a very good hoax, is it? Because you want to have an imaginative hoax that is ridiculous, but that people believe, whereas saying that you're going to stand for Parliament is entirely plausible. And it's like having a hoax where you say, I'm just going out to post a letter, and someone says, see you then. You say, no, it was just a joke. I'm not really... Got you there, ha-ha. Gullible.
Deprived of the chance to vote for the ridiculously named Swampy, voters are now left with the same boring choice of the other three party leaders, Blandy, Cheesy and No Hopey. So, at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and John 4, Alan and Tony 4. And we start round two with an item spotted in The Week magazine.
The medical devices company Innovative Technologies is attempting to reshape the wound care market with dressing that apparently offers better performance at lower prices. They also have other interesting projects on the boil.
To David Rowe of London for sending us that. Jeremy, how much are whispering grasses worth listening to?
This is the police trying to sort out a pay scale for grasses, presumably. The police are trying to rationalise the way in which they fit people up, because it costs different amounts all over the country. Because what they'll do is they'll go to somebody and who's an old lag, who'll say anything for money, and they'll say, what do you know about this person? He'll say, nothing at all, I've never heard of him. And they'll say, here's 100 quid. And they'll say, he did that bank job last Tuesday. And the police take this as being valid evidence, and it stands up in court, and people go down for it. But the amounts vary around the country, and they're trying to rationalise it.
By your sort of hold on old lag speak. Really? You had all those words, old lag, grass, all of that stuff.
Yes, it's very modern, yeah. I believe. Yeah. The criminal community used these words, like, bang to rights, governor. Yeah. Look, salami, the rosas are onto us. Things like that. Things like that, they say.
It's the news that detectives are to fix a national pay scale for informers, the intention being to improve police intelligence, if that's not a contradiction in terms. This will relieve the burden on the police, which has been so heavy lately that some defendants have had to write their own confessions. John, who gave us 5, asking, gimme 5?
Oh, well, any number of people. Roland Rat. Is it Roland Rat? Greg Dyke? Rats joining a sinking ship. We had the Spice Girls, didn't we?
No, it was... It was a dream you had.
And unless you give me extra points, I'll be showing the negatives to everyone here tonight. The Spice Girls opened the proceedings on Channel 5, which I thought was against the representation of the Big Black, because they are now political figures, of course, the Spice Girls. So presumably they have to have Paddy next night with his pop group. I'm sure he has one, and then Tony on the third night, and it'll be equal, it'll be fine. And then Swampy and his singers on the fourth night. And in fact, that's the only live stuff Channel 5 will have. Everything else will be from 1954 or America. But we won't know because no one will watch it.
The Spice Girls seem to get all the work now, don't they? Which must be disappointing to the Nolans, who are planning a comeback. They've got these names as well, haven't they? Sporty Spice, I think. Ginger Spice and Posh Spice. I'm just looking forward to 30 years from now when they're all Old Spice.
Channel 5's new launch slogan was Gimme 5, which by the end of the second day was an ambitious stab at an audience figure. Tony, please listen to this.
Old Man River and Old Man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along.
Tony, which old father is drying out?
The Thames, yes. Thank you for the help. The Thames can't seem to make up its mind whether to flood or dry up. I mean, a few years ago, everyone was scared about the Thames flooding and they spent millions and billions on the Thames barrier. Now it's at the lowest level it's been for 200 years, I believe. And I think, you know, if it carries on like this, if you get the ferry from Westminster to Hampton Court, you'll have to get out and wade the final bit. So it is, and there's two reasons. I think the utilities companies are taking out too much water, and there's not enough falling from the sky, which we can't really control. But so London apparently now is drier than Rome, I think, which makes the Romans wetter than us, I suppose. Which isn't true. So Londoners, you know, they won't have anything to talk about soon, because they always talk about the weather, you know. So we can't just get up and say, morning, dry again today, innit? So conversation will dry up as well, I'm afraid.
Dry enough for you, people say, don't they? People always say, cold enough for you, or hot enough for you, and I want to say, no, it's not. Could you do something about it for me, since you seem to have your finger on the pulse?
In spite of the Thames drying up, it's still possible to find salmon returning to the river, usually still wrapped in a supermarket trolley. Alan, who snapped when a snapper snapped?
Oh. It used to be a blow to my prospective knighthood when royal questions came up and I got them and I had to talk about people being slags and slappers, but it's all right now, because she's on their side. This is a woman whose name I never quite know now. I call her Princess Diana, don't I? I mean, she's not Mrs. Wales or anything. She kept on changing her name. Anyway, Mrs. Wales got a terrible shock during the week. It had never happened to her before. A man came out and poked a lens at her. And she screamed. And a man who was coming by, called, I think, Darren something, banged this photographer's head against the wall, put him in an arm lock, and took the camera away. What was that thing, said Princess Diana Wales. They said, it was a camera. She had never seen anything like that before. I think it was outrageous. A woman whose entire career was built on being on the cover of everything in the world should have got upset. And a bloke was trying to make a few bob, selling pictures to Oggie or wherever it was.
But the thing is,
his name was Byrne, wasn't it?
The photographer thought it was reasonable as well. He did. He said he wasn't going to sue or anything. He thought it was entirely reasonable that when he takes pictures, someone comes and thumps him.
Well, the other bloke was just being well-mannered. That's what he said, didn't he?
He said he was properly brought up.
Yeah, exactly. He got someone in an arm lock and shoved him against the wall. That's what any well-mannered person would do.
It's good that she still carries that amount of authority that she can just walk around the streets going, "Guards, seize him!" And people just say, "You poor fools, your puny cameras are no match for me! I am Diana, Princess of Wales! Ha, ha, ha!"
Had the photographer given her 15 minutes to make up, it would have been a totally different story.
And the scores at the end of round two are still a nerve-tingling 8 points each. And we begin round three with a cutting from the Sunday Telegraph.
Jogger Rob Garside interrupted his attempt to run round the world after being shot at in Russia. He returned to London to buy a bulletproof vest.
Thank you, Terry Hawking of Leeds, for spotting that. Jeremy, which Ford was available in any colour as long as it's blue?
I've never had trouble with a stalker, apart from first thing in the morning, obviously. What was the question again?
Still trying to work out what your answer meant. Jeremy, which Ford was available in any colour as long as it's blue?
Anna Ford? Anna Ford, said the SH word. We probably can't say it on the wireless, can we?
Charlotte can say.
What, who's that? Oh, Charlotte?
Yeah.
Can you say it?
She has special permission to say dirty words.
Oh, yes. Say it like the horny slut you are. Give us German pie, go on. The good thing for Charlotte, though, is that now that Anna Ford is talking dirty on the radio, all the perverts that normally write to Charlotte because they get off on the shipping forecast have now completely transferred their affections to Anna Ford. So she's going to get all the filthy mail and men standing around naked with balaclavas on outside the house. Isn't she? But that's the story, isn't it?
This is Anna Ford's unfortunate use of a four-letter word while discussing Simon Pemberton from The Archers on the Today programme. Listeners complained about what they described as Miss Ford's effing and blinding, though, as everybody knows, it's not the effing that makes you blind. John, listen to this. What's back on the map after being in a rut?
Oh, good. Rutland. That's it, really.
Yep.
No jokes. Forest County, Rutland back, Oakham. It turns out, Rutland's bit. What's the beer they make in Rutland?
What's the what?
The beer they make
Rutland's
in Rutland.
Rutland's County.
Rutland's County, the only beer, the only thing that anyone knew Rutland for.
Full of what was it before then? Was it sort of Greater Birminghamshire or something?
And it was Leicestershire. It was that sort of Parson's Nose bit at the end of Leicestershire.
Ruddles isn't the county, is it?
No.
Rutland is, but Ruddles isn't.
No, it was called Ruddles County.
Well, why did they call it Ruddles County?
Why are you asking me?
Well, you seem to be an authority on this.
No, that was as much authority as I have. I have one fact for every citizen of Rutland, and that was it.
This is the return of Rutland to the county map of England since it disappeared, hidden under a staple. To celebrate the event, the tourist board have published a new city guide, the Rutland A to B. And this is... listed all their famous residents in the volume Who's That? It's important for anyone planning to visit the newly restored county to note the time difference. When it's lunchtime in London, in Rutland it's 1964. Tony, what got turned off out of this world?
Ah, space question. The NASA Pioneer 10 spacecraft, or whatever it was called, they sent it off, I don't know, 20 years ago. It's now 6.2 billion miles from Earth, just far enough away to avoid the election coverage. And it sort of said, they've been sending messages back to the scientists, whatever, telling them exciting things they get very excited about. But it sends an 8-watt signal. And it's now so far away from Earth that it sort of, this signal takes 9 hours to get there, and it's actually a sort of billionth of a trillionth of a watt by the time it gets here. Still a better signal than most households get of Channel 5. So they've decided it's so far away now, they're just going to have to turn it off.
But what really bothers me about it is it's got a picture on the side of a naked man and woman. Woman is a rather good-looking woman. But it won't stop anywhere for 30,000 years when it hits its first star. If there's intelligent life out there, do you know how far we've developed in 30,000 years? 30,000 years ago, we were that big and our knuckles brushed the ground. Out there on this star, they're going to find this Pioneer 10. Terrific women with big tits on Earth. Let's go. We've got a turn-up by which time we will have evolved into things as tall as the Eiffel Tower with 9 heads.
But you know...
And they're going to say, bring out our women.
What interested me about them pulling the plug on this satellite was it in a persistent vegetative state, or had they just got bored of visiting it?
The naked man that they had there, he's just sort of holding up his hand, just as if to say, sorry about this, we usually wear pants.
He's quite reasonably endowed too, actually. Yeah. Endowed enough for you, as I would say to Jeremy. And that's going to surprise
you. When might you say that to Jeremy?
Alan usually introduces me as his ward.
A million years' time. It's going to bother all these women on this star as well.
Yeah.
They're all going to want to take off for Earth, and they're going to be shocked when they get here.
Well, some of us will be, right?
Nobody.
At the same time as the Pioneer spacecraft headed out of the solar system, there came theories that plants may have grown on Jupiter's moons and that intelligent life evolved from inside a comet. But anyone who's tried to buy a TV set in their cell will know what a ridiculous notion that is. And the scores at the end of round three are, boringly enough, Jeremy and John 12, Alan and Tony 12. Jeremy, listen to this.
So I wanna know, what's the name of the game? Does it mean anything to you? What's the name of the game? Can you feel it the way I do?
For whom was Damien a bad omen?
Ah. This was a man at the NUT conference, a delegate, who said some things which are quite sound and sensible, like Ofsted and the league tables are all garbage, they should get rid of them. But then went off at this tangent about names, saying that people with certain names are no-hopers, no matter how much money you spend. I mean, no matter how much money you throw at somebody called Ranulph, he will end up aimlessly wandering the world. Pointless expeditions. You can lavish money on somebody called Tamara, and she'll be a worthless idler and a parasite all her life. But the main names were sort of lump and proletarian names he had it in for. Damien, I agree, is you know, worrying parents, a child called Damien, mother probably called Rosemary. But then he went off about Nathan, which is a perfectly reasonable name, and Dean and Liam. What he's basically saying is, you grow up on an estate with a name like that, and you stay on an estate all alone. Now, my parents lived... this will interest you. My parents lived on a council estate when I was born, and once I'd been called Jeremy, we had to move. Almost overnight, it was like gone with the wind, and they became owner-occupiers after that.
This is a claim at a teacher's conference that boys with certain names are doomed to academic failure. Geography teacher Nigel Turner singled out Damien, Dean and Liam as being particularly unimpressive, with John, Tony and Paddy very close behind. Some Liams have been very successful, though Liam Gallagher from Oasis admits his school days were a failure. He spent his whole time there doing lines, so not much change there. John, whose single ticket left him flying solo?
This was the guy who waited for a plane. They said, you want to get on this plane or the next one? He said, the next one. I've got nothing to do. He was sitting at an airport. Why should you have nothing to do in an airport? And he got on the plane. He was the only person on it. And they said, if that had happened to me, they'd say, I'm sorry, you're still sitting in seat number 136E. But he got on and they said, take A1. He sat in the front with the pilot. And they came round and they gave him massages and chickens and things all the way through. And called him Nathan. And he had a wonderful time.
They said, warm nuts. He said, yes, I'm fine, thank you very much.
He had nobody to talk to but himself, but in keeping with every other flight he'd ever been on, after 3 hours he started to find the conversation so boring he asked to be moved to another seat. He'd flown to New York to buy his godson a Buzz Lightyear toy, which he had safely stored in his luggage. So there was an extra treat for some child in Reykjavik. Tony, what can seriously damage your home-viewing pleasure?
Well, there was a lady, I think... I'm certain it was a lady. And she had a video recorder that kept breaking down. And she took it in to be repaired. She'd spent about 300 quid on it. And they found that there was nicotine on the heads of the video recorder. And it hadn't taken up smoking, so she was confused. It wasn't wearing a nicotine patch or anything. And it turned out it was a victim of passive smoking. She smoked 20 a day, and this is affecting the video recorder. And, you know, it should be a warning on cigarettes now. Warning, cigarettes may seriously damage your heads. presumably the video recorder in question became addicted, all her other household appliances as well. It's quite a common phenomenon. I was stopped by a toaster and a vacuum cleaner on the way here. Bum a fag off me, so it's terrible. What? for a video recorder, it wants another fag, it just rewinds and has it again.
But it lights up after Baywatch.
Alan, how can a nice house put more mouse into a mouse?
It's about middle-class mice being 15% smarter than everybody else. If you have mice, and you feed them on squid and polenta, take them to the Gavroche, take them to Mystique on their holidays, give them Ray-Bans, travel the world getting them Buzz Lightyear toys, after a bit they get open scholarships to Balliol. But they claim they can transfer this mice thing to children. Presumably if you don't bring mice up in a decent middle-class home and bring your children up in working-class homes, then I suppose your children gnaw holes in the furniture and come up in the lavatory when you don't want them to. I never understood this relationship between mice and people. They always do these experiments on mice.
What happens if you bring a mouse up in a council flat but call him Jeremy? Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy?
This is from the Sunderland Echo. And it says, Sunderland fullback Martin Scott will know later today whether he faces a third groin operation in 6 months. He was booked into a Hartlepool hospital to be examined by the specialist who carried out the second operation 10 weeks ago. And though he has had no problems with the left side of his groin, the pain has returned to the other side of his stomach area. I am gutted, said Scott.
John, this is a philosophical little item from the Toronto Globe and Mail, which I read daily. Public tragedies often trigger memories of personal sorrows, writes Sheila Ann Feeney of the New York Daily News. So it's from two papers. When the Challenger blew up, attendance at the Animal Medical Center's pet loss support group skyrocketed.
Tony. This is from a local paper. It's a misprint in an advert. I can only assume that there's an S missing somewhere here. But it goes, dog kennel, suit medium-sized dog, good condition, very turdy.
Alan.
The Yorkshire Evening Post. A starving seagull fledgling, which fell from a nest on a Scarborough chimney pot and rolled into the gutter from which it was unable to move, owes its survival to the householder, Mrs. Maureen Littleton, who stood in the garden and shot kipper fillets at it from a catapult.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores, which are, oh gosh, boringly, 16 each. But before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Friend magazine.
Daisy, the pantomime cow, was found guilty of aggravated trespass in Andover this week after taking part in demonstrations against the Newbury bypass. Both ends of the cow pleaded not guilty. were given conditional discharges in order to pay £50 costs each. The front end is considering an appeal.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Jeremy Hardy, John Diamond and Tony Hort. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. Producer was Aled Evans.